Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 371 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in today's podcast, we're going to be talking about the spinal cord. We're going to be reviewing the spinal cord for all the USMLE exams, step 1, step 2, and step 3. Today, for the most part, I just want to orient you, though, to the spinal cord. Neurology is just one of these things that many people give up on. They're like, ugh. This thing is way too hard to learn. I'm not going to waste brain cells learning this. But the thing is, most times, because it's something people just ignore, most times they make the questions pretty easy on the exams, right? So if you just put in a little extra effort, you could get all those questions, right? The thing is, again, it may be 5-6 questions that ends up differentiating between a person getting the 240s versus getting the 250s, right? So you might as well just snag all the points that you can get. If you're getting many of those questions that many people are getting wrong, right, then that's certainly going to help your score in the long run. And again, if you're taking the USMLE Step 2 CK or Step 3 exams anytime within the next like 4 weeks, I would encourage you to attend the MBME Test Taking Strategies course that we have next Monday from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Mountain Time. That's 4 to 6:30 Eastern. And during the course, right, we address many things. We address how to read questions. When you narrow down your answer choices to two things, which one do you pick from those two? How do you answer ethics questions? How do you answer risk factor questions? How do you answer questions when you don't know what in the world they're talking about, right? We talk about all those things. And we also talk about strategies for just eliminating answers that make absolutely no sense, right? But again, these are, because again, you can know, but you also need to be able to pick out the right answer, right? So we work on picking out the right answer in that course. Again, tons of people have taken this course. They've done extremely well. And then I've had many people have really good score increases from that course. And then we have the 24-hour course. It's going to be taking place from the 22nd to the 25th of February. That's going to be from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mountain Time each day. That's going to be from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right? And again, if you're, you know, we review PED, surgery, IM, OB-GYN, psych, neuro, surgery, biostatistics, ethics, communications, multi-system processes and disorders, healthcare systems, right? So again, many people have taken these courses and they've done really well. To be honest with you, probably one of my most favorite days during the week is Wednesday, because I pretty much always get good news on Wednesdays from multiple people. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump right into it, right? So what in the world is the spinal cord? Well, the spinal cord is a long tube. Obviously, you could deduce that on your own, right? That's not why you're listening here, right? But it's a long tube that basically grows from the, you know, medulla, down the whale to the lower, you know, the lower body. Now, just some key things to keep in mind, right? With a spinal cord, you want to make sure you know the blood supply. Remember, the spinal cord is actually supplied by the anterior and the posterior spinal arteries. You know, there are also many other arteries, but I would say maybe of all of them, the big one to know is the anterior spinal artery. Now, why is the anterior spinal artery important? Again, I'm going to try to, again, this is not going to be like a stock lecture. No, you know, I don't like to do those things. Those things are not the best ways to pass across knowledge, at least in medicine, right? So I'm going to bring in integrations as we go along, right? So the anterior spinal artery, what's the big deal with it that you want to know for your exam? Well, you want to think about it in the context of a person that has had an abdominal aortic aneurysm fixed, right? And then let's say they had like multiple bouts of hypotension during the surgery or the endovascular repair. Well, if you have that problem, that could potentially be problematic for a said patient. Why? Because the abdominal aorta, it gives off a pretty large artery. There's a big branch called the artery of Adamkiewicz, right? Adamkiewicz is spelled as A-D-A-M-K-I-E-W-I-C-Z. The artery of Adamkiewicz. The artery of Adamkiewicz gives rise to the anterior spinal artery, right? So if, for example, you're fixing a AAA and you mess up the artery of Adamkiewicz, well, whoops, that's going to cause problems with the anterior spinal artery. And the person can lose everything except the dorsal column. Basically, all the other pathways and tracts in the spinal cord just stop working, right? The only thing that's going to be left behind is the dorsal columns and maybe some parts of the corticospinal tract. But for all intents and purposes, everything but the dorsal columns will be remaining, right? That's part of what we call the anterior spinal artery syndrome. Now, we know that the spinal cord, right, has different parts, right? The big parts to know, you know, there's the dorsal parts that are in the back, and then there's the ventral parts that are in the front, right? Now, remember, the dorsal parts are sensory. There's actually an embryologic reason behind this, but that's beyond the scope of my discussion in this podcast, so we're going to skip that. But basically, the dorsal columns are sensory, and then the more ventral parts are motor, right? The dorsal parts are sensory, the ventral parts are motor. That's an important piece of information to know, right? So we know that anything that has to do with sensation has to be dealing with the dorsal parts. Anything that has to be dealing with motor activity has to deal with the ventral parts, right? And then there's a few other minor details here and there that, you know, kind of important to know. So let's start with the dorsal parts, right? Sensory. Well, I'm sure as you've gone through medical school, you've heard of this also fancy thing called the dorsal root ganglion, right? The dorsal root ganglion. Now, it's a ganglion. Whenever you see the word ganglion or nucleus, it means that there are cell bodies there, right? So the dorsal root ganglion is a ganglion on the dorsal or the back part of the spinal cord that has cell bodies of sensory things, right? So what are those sensory things? Well, those are things that pick up information from like the skin, from your arms, from your legs, all those things, right? So they pick up information, right? They pick up information, right? So they pick up information, and then that information comes up, right? And, you know, the cell bodies for those neurons that are picking up that information, right? Those first cell bodies are in the dorsal root ganglion, right? And then many times, as a rule, when you pick up information, right, you will go and synapse, right? This is like the thing is neurology. Many people think neurology is a bunch of memorization. It's really not. Neurology is really a bunch of principles with just wide application. Let me explain, right? The thing is, as a rule, just in general, for most ascending pathways, they follow this rule. Neuron 1 comes from the body. And then neuron 1 goes and synapses on neuron 2. And then when it synapses on neuron 2, neuron 2 is going to decussate. This applies to pretty much every ascending tract that you're responsible for knowing for your exams, right? Neuron 2 will decussate. And then neuron 2 will go and hit up a buddy somewhere in the thalamus, right? Like VPL or VPM or whatever. And then that fiber from the thalamus is going to go to somewhere in the brain. That's how it always works, right? So you have information, goes through neuron 1, neuron 1 synapses at neuron 2, neuron 2 decussates, it ascends in the brain, goes to the thalamus, hits up VPL or VPM, and then those thalamic neurons go all the way to the cortex, right? So let's maybe look at these specific kinds of information and how they travel, shall we, right? So the very first one, let's look at pain and temperature, right? Pain and temperature, right? That's the spinal thalamic tract, right? It takes like crude touch, pain and temperature information, takes it from the body, right? The cell bodies, right? So the axons will pick up the information, take it to the cell bodies in the dorsal root ganglion, right? And then they'll get into the dorsal parts of the spinal cord, right? Remember, the dorsal parts of the spinal cord are sensory. So it goes into the dorsal parts of the spinal cord. And as it's entering the spinal cord, that's what we call the Lissauer's tract. It's spelled as L-I-S-S-A-U-E-R, Lissauer's, right? You know, an apostrophe and S at the end, obviously, right? Lissauer's tract, right? And those fibers, they synapse immediately, right? So the pain, temperature, crude touch fibers, they synapse on the second neuron in the spinal cord, right? They synapse on that second neuron. Well, what did we say always happens to second neurons? Second neurons love to decussate, right? So the thing that's going to happen is that that second neuron is going to decussate. It's going to cross in something we call the anterior white commissure, right? Like literally in front of the central canal of the spinal cord. Remember, the central canal of the spinal cord is continuous with the subarachnoid space for the most part. It carries CSF, right? It carries cerebrospinal fluid, right? So the thing that happens is that, you know, it crosses, it decussates in the anterior white commissure just in front of the central canal. And then it ascends all the way, right? And when it's ascending in the brainstem going on its way to the thalamus, it's actually going to be moving in the lateral brainstem. In a future podcast, you'll see precisely why this information is important. But it's going to ascend in the lateral brainstem, right? It's going to go to the thalamus, right? To synapse on the third neuron. And then that third neuron from the thalamus is going to go to the cortex, right? And depending on where you're getting that sensory information from, that tells you where that neuron from the thalamus is going to go to, right? So obviously, if you're getting information from like your face or your upper extremities, it's going to go to more lateral parts of your cortex, right? Middle cerebral artery territory. But if you're doing more lower extremity sensation, it's going to go to more medial parts of your cortex, right? That's the whole concept of the homunculus, right? That's the whole concept of the homunculus, right? Now, again, it's very important to remember the spinothalamic tract travels in the lateral brainstem. This is extremely high yield to know for exams. Many people, you'd be surprised. You wonder, how did these people make it through neurology not knowing this concept? Okay, now let's talk about another ascending pathway. Well, another ascending pathway is what we call the dorsal column medial lemniscus system, right? This one, again, it works pretty much just like the spinothalamic tract, just a little different, right? It's just different information it carries, and the place it decussates is also different. Now, don't forget, that anterior white commissure, I said it's literally in front of the central canal. Well, if you have a syringomyelia, right, you know, where you have like a cystic dilation of the spinal cord, of the central canal of the spinal cord, that can begin to impinge on those fibers of the spinothalamic tract, right? So the person will have a loss of pain, temperature, and crude touch in a cape-like distribution. Right? And remember, syringomyelias, for whatever reason, tend to be associated with Chiari-1 malformations, right? But again, we'll probably deal with these lesions more in a different podcast, like a separate podcast on like spinal cord lesions, right? This is just all very high yield things for the exam. So now let's talk about the dorsal columns. Well, they take information on vibration, on proprioception, and on fine touch, right? So vibration, proprioception is spelled as proprioception, proprioception. Kind of sounds cool, actually, right? So vibration, proprioception, and fine touch. It carries that information, right? Carries it. The axons carry that information, right, to the cell body, right, the first neuron, which is in the dorsal root ganglion. Right. And then the dorsal root ganglion, you know, those fibers move into the spinal cord, right, into the dorsal parts of the spinal cord. Now, remember, you can get fine touch, vibration, and proprioceptive information from your lower extremities and from your upper extremities. Right. So the thing is, those neurons, those axons of the original cell bodies, that neuron number one in the dorsal root ganglion, those axons, when they're in the spinal cord, they have different names, right? If you're dealing with the lower extremities, fine touch, vibration, proprioception from the lower extremities, it's called the gracile fasciculus, right? But if you're dealing with the upper extremities, it's called the cuneate fasciculus. And it's actually kind of easy to remember where they are oriented in the spinal cord. Right, your lower extremities are literally in the middle of you, right? Your upper extremities are more off to the side, right? So it would make sense that the gracile fasciculus is in the middle, is more medial in the spinal cord, and the cuneate fasciculus is more lateral in the spinal cord, right? And those fibers, right, again, they are still the axons of neuron one, right? They've not hit up neuron two, so you shouldn't be thinking about decussation just yet, right? But those fibers, the thing they do is they actually, they don't decussate, they don't cross in the spinal cord like spinothalamic does. Those fibers actually just go into the brainstem, right? And they go up medially in the brainstem. That's very high yield to know. They go up medially in the brainstem, right? Until they get to the medulla, right? They go to the medulla and then they synapse on the second neuron. Well, what's the second neuron called? Well, the second neuron, right, if you're dealing with the lower extremities, right, those axons from neuron one that are dealing with the lower extremities, they're going to synapse on the gracile nucleus in the medulla, right? And then the fibers for the upper extremities, right, those axons from neuron one, you know, coming from dorsal ganglion, dorsal parts of the spinal cord that are going to the medulla, they're going to synapse on the cuneate nucleus. And then the fibers from the gracile and the cuneate nucleus, right? That's neuron two, right? Neuron two, we said as a rule, neuron twos love to decussate. So those fibers are going to decussate. So many times they are called the internal arcuate fibers. They're going to decussate in the caudal medulla, in the lower parts of the medulla. And then they are going to ascend, keep going in the brainstem. Again, how do they travel in the brainstem? They travel medially. And like any good, wise neuron two, what do? They're going to go to the thalamus, they're going to heat up their buddies at VPM and VPL, and then those thalamic fibers are going to follow the rules of the homunculus, and they're going to go to the cortex, right? Again, remember, the anterior cerebral artery deals with the lower extremities and the penis. The middle cerebral artery deals more with the upper extremities and the face, right? So those are the ascending tracts. Now, what is the big descending tracts to keep in mind? The big descending tract to keep in mind is the corticospinal tract, right? It's a motor tract, right? And look at the name, right? Corticospinal, right? So that means it starts in the cortex and goes to the spinal cord. That's why it's called literally the corticospinal tract, right? So if you think about it, this is literally a motor tract, So since it's a motor tract, it's going to be going to somewhere that is a little more ventral in the spinal cord. Because remember, we established this rule at the beginning, that the dorsal parts of the spinal cord are sensory and the ventral parts of the spinal cord are motor, right? So what happens to that neuron one? Well, that neuron, you know, comes from the cortex, right? The thing is, this motor tract is more of a two-neuron system. Right? It's more of a two-neuron system, although that's not entirely true, but we're going to call it a two-neuron system. That is true for the USMLE exams, but we're not going to go into neurology residency slash fellowship level stuff here, right? But basically, neuron one, which is called the upper motor neuron, is going to start in the cortex, right? It's going to come down through a structure called the corona radiata, right? It's going to come down through a structure called the corona radiata, right? It's going to come in front of the cerebral peduncles, right? So if you're looking at the midbrain, those big bulges, those big, like, almost like they look like breasts of the midbrain, the cerebral peduncles, those are actually just corticospinal tract fibers, right? Now, one thing I want to say is that as those fibers are coming down, right, they also go through the posterior limb of the internal capsule. This is floridly high yield to know for your exams. They go through the posterior limb of the internal capsule. Well, why is that important to know? The posterior limb of the internal capsule has this fancy schmancy blood supply that is referred to as the lenticulostriate artery, right? The lenticulostriate artery. Well, why do we need to know about the lenticulostriate artery? Well, the thing is, that artery, especially in people that are very hypertensive, remember, the biggest risk factor for any kind of stroke is hypertension, right? The lenticulostriate arteries, if you have really bad hypertension, they can bulge out and form an aneurysm. Many times we love to call these things Charcot-Bouchard aneurysms, right? And when those aneurysms pop, you're going to cause a hemorrhagic infarction of the posterior limb of the internal capsule. Basically, those people, they're going to lose all motor sensation, right, on one side of the body. They're going to have what we call a dense paralysis, right? They're going to have what we call a dense paralysis. They're going to have what we call a dense paralysis on the contralateral side of the body for reasons you will see in a bit, right? So you're going to come down through the cerebral peduncles, right? And those fibers, as they are traveling through the brainstem, they travel medially in the brainstem. So this is the second medial thing I'm talking about in the brainstem. Don't forget, your corticospinal tract travels medially in the brainstem. Your dorsal columns travel medially in the brainstem. But remember, your dorsal columns are sensory. Your corticospinal tract is motor. And then your spinal thalamic tract travels laterally in the brainstem, right? Travels laterally in the brainstem. So those fibers will come down. And then when they get to the medullary pyramids, it's a more caudal part of the medulla. They're going to cross. They're going to decussate, right? They're going to decussate. They are going to decussate. And then when they decussate, they're going to come down, right, to the spinal cord. They're going to go to the ventral horn of the spinal cord. Because remember, they are motor fibers, so they don't really have much business in the dorsal parts of the spinal cord. They want to go a little more forward, more ventral parts, right? So they're going to synapse on neuron 2, right, which is what we call the lower motor neuron. That lower motor neuron is then going to proceed and go to the neuromuscular junction and synapse on a skeletal muscle fiber, right? It's going to release acetylcholine. Remember, I literally have a podcast on acetylcholine, right? That's a very high yield podcast to know, where I talk about like Lambert Eaton, myasthenia gravis, and all that fun stuff, right? So again, very high yield to know those things, right? If you understand them, you're going to be in pretty good shape for your exam. And we're going to talk about lesions. We're going to talk about integrations about with this stuff in a future podcast, right? I mean, there's many other spinal cord pathways, but to be honest with you, the NBMEs don't really care about those much, right? There's like the tectospinal tract. There's the rubrospinal tract. There's the reticulospinal tract. There's the there's like vestibulospinal tract. But those are all very complex things, you know. I don't think those deserve a mention because they're more for like med school basic science exams than a USMLE context. And then there's the spinal cerebellar tracts, and we talk about those in a future podcast, right? But again, I really hope that this helps you establish a basis for understanding the spinal cord. I promise you, the spinal cord is one of those things you want to understand going into your exam. I mean, I can even give you an example, right? Like, if for example you know the things that travel medially and laterally, right, then you can begin to pick apart like these lesion questions they give in the brainstem, in the spinal cord. They become like a joke to you when you just know these rules, right? Like for example, right, if you see a person, their tongue is not working, right, and you see that, oh, they have like these upper motor neuron problems, that's going to localize the lesion to the medial medulla. Easy. Why? Because you just take two pieces of information. You know that, ooh, they have upper motor neuron problems. Ooh, gee. That means the medial medulla must be involved because the corticospinal tract is a medial tract. And then you're like, huh, their tongue is not working. That's not good, right? Well, that's going to be the hypoglossal nerve, right? The hypoglossal nerve, right, is cranial nerve 12, right? As you'll see, it actually helps to know the where cranial nerves are in the brainstem, right? Remember, cranial 6 is in the medial pons. Cranial 12 is in the medial medulla, right? The multiples of 6, right? But then pretty much every other cranial nerve is in the lateral brainstem, right? If we're looking at just pons and medulla, right? Like cranials 9, 10, and 11 are in the lateral medulla. Cranials 5, 7, and 8 are in the lateral pons, right? Remember, 3 and 4, for the most part, are motor cranial nerves. So they're in the medial midbrain, right? And one final thing I want to say is that pathway, that superior cervical ganglion sympathetic tract Horner syndrome causing pathway, actually travels in the lateral brainstem. That's very high yield to know. It actually travels in the lateral brainstem. Again, you're going to see why. Basically, today's goal was to lay down rules. Now that you understand the rules, you'll see that in a future podcast, I'm going to help you make integrations with those rules. So as I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for many exams, step one, step two CK, step three, preclinical med school exams, third year shelf exams. I offer again, 24-hour review course. I actually have one next week for step 2 CK, step 3, and complex level 2 and 3, and an MBME test taking strategies course next week, Monday. And then for those that are taking the USMLE step 2 CK or step 3 or complex level 2 or 3 exams in the summer, I have what I call a DISC, D-I-S-K school, the Divine Intervention step 2 CK school. It's going to be taking place in the first 2 weeks of May. It's going to be 75 hours long. But again, I really want to invest deeply in everyone that is attending the school. So I'm going to cap the number of people that can attend at 40. So if you're interested, just shoot me an email through the website and I'll give you some more information. And then one other thing I would also say is I have these podcasts on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, and on Spotify, at least the most recent 150. If you want everything from episode 1 all the way to episode 371, then you want to go to the website divineinterventionpodcast.com. If you have a WordPress account and you subscribe, you'll get an email notification whenever I make a new podcast. And then another thing I want to say is that I have a YouTube channel. It's called Divine Intervention, USMLE Podcasts and Videos. That's where I post the videos that I make. And then I have another website called DivineInterventionLifeLessons.com, right? Many people said, oh, Divine, I really love the life lessons you put at the end of every podcast, right? And many of you have probably figured it out at this point. It's no big secret that I'm a Christian. So I decided to make a website where, I use the Bible to explain just certain problems that are faced by humanity or certain character traits that will help you to be successful in life. Right now, I believe I have about 59 episodes. Most of them are like 10 or 15 minutes long. And I even have the podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's called the Divine Intervention Life Lessons Podcast. So thank you for listening to me today. A quick life lesson I have for you, right? Many of us know that today is Valentine's Day, right? The key thing I would just say is show love, right? Show love. If you're a Christian, love God, right? But show love to your fellow man, right? Love your neighbor as you love yourself. That's just the truth. I feel like we live in a world where there's a lot of hate these days, where there's a lot of division, where people are always fighting, when one political party is fighting with the other, where one sect is fighting with the other, where one group is fighting with the other, where there is one war going here and one rumor of war going here. But I'll just encourage you, show love to your fellow man. That is just the truth, right? When there's unity, success is inevitable. Right. But when there is disunity, right, then failure is inevitable. Right. So just show love to your fellow man. Right. Just stop hating and start loving. That's the life lesson I'll give you today. If you start loving one person at a time, I think the world that we live in is going to be a better place. So thank you for listening to me. Have a wonderful rest of your day. God bless you and happy Valentine's. Thank you.